This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Hi, this is Gil Scott-Heron, assuming that you know who you are. What you may not know is that you're listening to WUSB, Good Music, Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, in stereo.
And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for this hour on Tuesday evening, April the 22nd, Earth Day. Yes, today is Earth Day, and hopefully everybody is out there doing earthy type things, whatever that might entail. I only just found out about it a little while ago, which is kind of sad because I know years ago I really knew when Earth Day was going to be. But we have so many other days to celebrate. We have War Day. We have, you know, Environmental Spill Day. And just General Ignorance Day, which seems to be almost every day these days. So we'll try and open the phone lines up to people who might have more cheerful news about what they did on Earth Day. Maybe you didn't drive. Maybe you planted a tree. Maybe you killed a stupid person who is polluting. I don't know. You know, everyone has their own way of celebrating holidays like this. And I'm curious as to what that might be. And also, you know, I'm curious on hearing from the rest of the world, because, after all, it is Earth Day, and the United States, unbeknownst to many of us here, is not the only country on Earth. There are many countries, dozens, I hear. If you're out there and you're in one of those countries, feel free to give us a call. And again, so people know, the phone number is country code 1, in case you're out of the country, and area code 631... Exchange 632, extension WUSB. It's very simple once you practice a few times. And as we showed you last week, it is possible to call in and not lose the connection. But you have to pay for every minute. It's kind of complicated, but there is a way to do that. Seraph is here. Seraph, how you doing?
Hey, good. How you doing?
You're from the other show.
Yes, I am.
Dropped in unexpectedly here. It happens sometimes. People will be dropping in, especially when they're journeying from around the world and you know, stopping in. And you're stopping in from what country exactly?
The country of Great Neck.
Great Neck.
It's in the western area of the continent of Long Island.
Oh, okay. All right. You obviously talk to the people outside, and okay, all right. You see, here at WUSB, there's sort of a tradition to try and put one over on me, all right? And this has been going on for years, and I don't know exactly what it is that that's behind this. I think there's an element of jealousy. There's an element of, hostility, all that kind of thing. When somebody knows a lot about a particular subject matter, there are always those people that want to go out there and try to make a fool of them. So they come up with fake town names, you know, silly-sounding names, so that you'll maybe say the name on the air and make a fool of yourself. I don't need other people to make a fool of me. I mean, perfectly capable of doing that on my own. And these, was Great Neck? Is that the...
No. There's really a town called Great Neck. I think maybe you thought it was Grape Neck.
No. Listen... I've grown up on Long Island, lived here all my life. I know a thing or two about it. And all these fake names that people insist on giving me of towns. All right, you want to hear some of the more absurd ones? I remember this was a couple of years ago. Some guy tried to convince me that he was from Orient. Orient, you know, like in the Far East. I asked him, well, where is Orient anyway? And he said, oh, it's to the east. I was like, yeah, right.
It's got to be somewhere near Babylon.
Slammed the door in his face. Yeah, I mean... come on, at least if you're going to come up with names, come up with something a little bit more imaginative. Someone told me once, Plain View. I mean, come on. The person isn't thinking of anything when they come up with a name like that, Plain View. Come on.
Well, it's ordinary sounding.
Have a nice view, you know, but Plain View. Who would name a town Plain View? For God's sake, people, think a little bit. Or this one, Lynbrook. It took me about 3 seconds to realize the person was saying Brooklyn backwards. All right, trying to fool me with that, Lynbrook.
Ronkonkoma.
No, that's real. I saw that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's okay. Real. No, no. But, I mean, most of the towns on Long Island are named after the Indians that were slaughtered.
Yeah.
So, don't say we never did anything.
Hey, you know about Lake Success, right?
Yeah. There's no Lake Success either.
There's no Lake Success?
There is no Lake Success. That's only Lake Ronkonkoma on Long Island. There's no Lake Success. Well, I challenge you to find me a Lake Success anywhere.
Well, look, there's a town called Lake Success. I can't find a lake, personally. There are a few drainage
you
pools
that I
can't
find a lake because there's no town, there's no lake, there's no nothing. This is, you know, it's a big waste of time. It's a big waste of time to come up with these names. I mean, look, I know a thing or two about the island. I've lived here all my life. I've grown up here. And because people are listening from around the world, I think it's particularly unfair to spread myths and mistruths and all kinds of false information. I mean, basically, the fact is the island, I mean, for those people who don't know, have just heard the legends of the place. It's not as big as everyone seems to think it is. Really, it's just, you know, maybe 20 miles circumference total. Pretty much everybody knows each other. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not going to say it's like a small town, but, you know, you walk down the street, you pretty much know people no matter where you are. I mean, you know, Amy Fisher, Joey Buttafuoco, Joe Rifkin. I was at a barbecue with all three of them once. I mean, you know, the island is a friendly place, it's a small place. And that's why it's particularly nerve-wracking when people come up with these, you know, ridiculous names and try to make a fool out of me. You know what the funniest one was? Someone tried this a couple of weeks ago.
What's that?
Didn't work. Hicksville. Hicksville. Can you believe somebody would
try to make me believe
there's a town called Hicksville? Well, why not just Stupid Town? How about that? Let's go to Stupid Town after the show.
Ronkonkoma.
Yeah, get some of those Long Island ducks. Yeah. All right, enough with mythology here. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to all those people out there that aren't from the area that have to listen to this nonsense. It's some people's idea of fun. All right. So, okay, you don't want to say where you're really from. We'll just say this Great Neck place.
I'm from an area that used to be called Madman's Neck before the white people got their hands on it.
Madman's Neck. Fine.
Madnan.
Mad who?
Madnan.
Who's Nan?
I don't know. Uh-huh. It's one word. It's not like...
Yeah. I suppose there's a middle neck and a little neck, too, right?
Yes, there are.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Let's take a look at some of the news, and then we'll take phone calls and things like that. Here, of course, the top story, you've probably all heard about this if you've been watching television or listening to the radio, reading newspapers, just walking down the street, walking down Long Island, people talk about the news all the time. Thirsty baboons attack girls in Kenya for water is the headline. Four young girls had the fright of their lives when a pack of thirsty baboons attacked them for their water containers in a northern region of Kenya, ravaged by a long dry spell. That's according to a local official. It's funny, you know, four baboons. No, I'm sorry, four young girls. I don't know how many baboons there were. Did they say how many baboons there were? 30 baboons. Oh, they had the advantage then. Okay, so 30 baboons come storming out of the woods, and... How did they know they wanted the water? I mean, did the baboons say, give us that, you know? Did they point to the containers of water? How did the baboons know that there was water inside the containers? It could have been, you know, it could have been some poisonous gas. It could have been anything, you know? They didn't know what it was. It could have been Coke, Pepsi, you know? They didn't know what they were getting. They saw containers, and they assumed that these four young girls were carrying water, so the baboons demanded the water. Let's see what happens here. Asha Wacko, 12 years old, suffered cuts and bruises to the face as she tried to fight off the animals, while Mamina Golicha had her clothes ripped by the baboon's claws. Wacko, I'm not sure, there's no good way to pronounce that, and her friends were attacked by about 30 baboons as they walked the 12-kilometer, which is 7.2 miles, for those of you who pay attention to the conversion. They were walking the 12 kilometers back to their village after drawing water at a well in Isilio district. They say they have sensitive names over there in Kenya. You know, real names, Isilio. And that's 320 kilometers, 192 miles north of the capital, Nairobi. And this all happened last Friday. You wonder why the baboons couldn't have gone to the well themselves, you know? I mean, you work for the water like everybody else. I don't get what the problem is. Anyway, according to Acilio County Chairman... No, I'm sorry. Acilio County Council Chairman Ibrahim Halaku Fayo, he said, this problem is not only confined to the area where the attack took place, but is in most parts of the district, which is experiencing severe shortage of water and pasture that threatens both the lives of human beings and wild animals. As a result of the attack, women walking long distances to fetch drinking water for their families have to be accompanied by local men to guard against wild animals. Around here, you need wild animals to guard against the local men. Lions, hyenas, and elephants now share the boreholes. Boreholes? used by local people. It lasts about a day there. Borehole. These boreholes are used by local people for fresh water due to a biting water shortage caused by low rainfall in the East African country. So you've got baboons attacking people in the streets in Kenya. What are you going to do? Where do we go from here?
I think we should just teach these wild animals how to bore their own holes.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if it's named after wild boars. They're nasty. If you ever have a bunch of wild boars chase you, that's something to remember. You know, that's not something you're going to forget anytime soon. Wild boars, they're hateful, spiteful animals. I don't know why. I don't know what pisses them off so much, but boy. I mean, I've never been attacked by baboons either, you know. But if I had to choose between a herd of wild boars and a herd of wild baboons, I think I'd take the boars. No, I'm sorry. I take the baboons.
Yeah.
The baboons.
I'd take baboons any day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could relate to them a lot more than I could relate to the wild boars. They're out of their minds. Okay, what else is going on? Of course, we have that nasty old war still happening. It's not really raging anymore. The war is not really raging. It's just kind of like, you know, the dust is clearing. People are saying, "Oh my God, look what's left after this." Okay, let's take a look at what's going on. France today proposed an immediate suspension of UN sanctions against Iraqi civilians. Speaking to reporters outside the UN Security Council chamber, Ambassador Jean-Marc de la Sablière also recommended a gradual phasing out of the oil for food program. 60% of the Iraqi people depend on the oil for food program, and without transition, it would be destabilizing and would leave humanitarian consequences, he said. The program should be adjusted to take into account realities, but there should be a phasing out. The oil for food program allowed the Iraqi government to use oil revenues from a UN escrow account to purchase humanitarian goods. And according to John Negroponte, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, he repeated Washington's stance that sanctions should be lifted as soon as possible. You know, they're making it sound as if the United States wanted this for a very long time. We wanted this for about, you know, a couple of weeks.
Could you read that first sentence again? They're lifting sanctions, or they want to lift sanctions against the Iraqi people? Is that what I heard you say?
Oh, yeah. That's against Iraqi civilians. That's what we see now. Now we're
I thought we had sanctions against their industry and their government,
yeah,
not against their people.
But we've destroyed the industry and the government, so now there's only the people left. And not very many of them are in very good shape either. So now the goal is to lift those sanctions. It doesn't make much sense to have sanctions now when the government doesn't exist anymore for all intents and purposes. But the interesting thing I heard this on Free Speech Radio News on the way over was that the plan apparently is to use money from Iraqi oil sales to rebuild the country. Did you hear that?
I heard that.
Yeah, no, this is the first I've heard of this, that actually they're going to be using the money from the country's wealth, as it were, to rebuild the country that was pretty much decimated by our bombs that we paid for with our tax dollars. It seems to me that they're going to have more immediate problems, such as, you know, starting some kind of new government, feeding their people, keeping civil unrest from becoming a big problem, which it already is. And we're actually going to be, and I can see how it plays out now in true, you know, World Bank, IMF, WTO type style, we're going to say, well, you know, you got to pay for this war out of your own oil there. And, of course, they won't be able to do that, so we're going to have to lend them money, and then they're going to be in debt to us for decades, and it's just going to never end. They're just going to be indebted to us for a very long time. They won't be independent. People will get angry, and the whole thing will start all over again.
Well, the Iraqis should be able to sell their own oil.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem is that we're going to try to sell it for them.
Yeah, that's how I see this playing out as well.
And people aren't too happy about that because, well, Russia has all these contracts with them that we're saying aren't legally binding mm-hmm. anymore. And so Russia's saying, well, we already paid for all this oil. We already paid for all sorts of stuff. And you still owe it to us. And we're, of course, saying, well, no, the former Iraqi regime owes it to you, not us.
Yeah, it's we seem to be playing both both sides here in various ways. And I don't know. I think it could be a big mess, even more of a big mess than it is right now. Now, I don't know if you saw what's going on today, but basically there was a pilgrimage into the central city of Karbala. Exuberant Shiite Muslim pilgrims surged into that city, reviving a religious tradition that was not allowed under Saddam Hussein's rule. Okay, because he was evil, because he was secularist, he didn't allow all these expressions of religious beliefs and things like that. So now you have all these pilgrims going to Kabbalah. The crowd, they say, could reach several million by the peak of the observance tomorrow. The pilgrims came from all over Iraq, some walking more than 60 miles. Many pilgrims expressed gratitude for their newfound religious freedom, but also called for the United States to leave Iraq. The political fervor of the crowd intensified on Tuesday. Earlier chants of no to America, no to Israel, no to the devil, gave way to death to America, death to Israel. They called for an Islamic state, something that worries Iraq's Christian community and others who want the new government to provide a separation between mosque and state. Now, I want to know, those of you out there listening right now, who out there is surprised by this? Please call us and give me your address because I want to come over and smack you, really. I mean, anybody who's surprised by this is a moron, all right? This is exactly the kind of thing that was going to happen when you unleashed all this religious fervor out there. And you know, of course, it's going to turn into Iran Part 2 after they threw the Shah of Iran out, which is somebody else who we put in power. Yeah, we put Saddam Hussein in power. Now we took Saddam Hussein out of power. It just keeps going in a big circle, and the United States is never going to be the friend of people who are manipulated by it. It's as simple as that. You're going to expect them to have some kind of democratic government because we want them to, no other reason. Well, you know, a lot of people aren't going to play along with that. What are you going to do when they elect people who we cannot work with? Like people who are, you know, devout Muslims who say death to America, death to Israel, death to the devil, all that kind of thing. It's we're basically setting it up for all kinds of conflict in the future. Remember, we supported the Taliban when they were kicking out the Russians. They were the good guys. That didn't last very long, did it? So it's a mess. It's a mess. It's going to get messier. It's kind of a funny mess, really, because I just can't believe how people are surprised by this. I really can't. Okay, and also we have Hans Blix out there. This is an interesting aspect of the whole thing. The United Nations Chief Weapons Inspector. Remember him? Remember them? The United Nations?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're still out there. He briefed the Security Council today, saying his inspectors would return to Iraq to resume looking for Iraq's weapons of mass destruction if that was what the council wanted. But this, at the same time, the White House was saying the U.S.-led coalition had taken over the job and they don't want help from the weapons inspectors. Now, think about that for a second. Think about this. The United States wants to find weapons of mass destruction. I mean, that justifies the entire war. Without that, there's really, not much justification to going around messing with another country's internal affairs and overthrowing the government and causing chaos. Supposedly the reason, you know, which a lot of us took with a big pillar of salt, for going in there in the first place was because Iraq was about to destroy the world with their weapons of mass destruction, even though nobody had said anything to that effect. Well, okay, now you have the most qualified people to find these things. They won't be intimidated. They won't be led around on a wild goose chase by Iraqi authorities because there are no more Iraqi authorities. They can work with the United States. The United States says, no, we don't want you. Why in God's name would the United States say, no, we don't want United Nations, United Nations weapons inspectors. I assume they're working for free. I don't know. Maybe they have to pay them, but it doesn't matter. Now, why would the United States not want that? You know, it's so suspicious and so, like, you know, I mean, you couldn't make it any more obvious that, you know, there's some kind of evidence planting going on or being planned or something like that. If you don't want the only people out there who are trustworthy in the eyes of the rest of the world, you don't want them to be a part of this. I mean, these are not the Iraqis. This is the United Nations. You know, there's people from all over the world on that particular committee there, weapons inspectors, where, you know, there's lots of them. They're very qualified. They should be there right now, you know, and unless it's too dangerous for them to be there, but I don't think it is anymore. I think, you know, the United States can search for weapons of mass destruction, so can the United Nations, and not wanting them there, that just, that makes things very suspicious, and if they do find something, I think a lot of people won't believe it. I mean, come on. If you're going to plant evidence, at least do it in a more intelligent way, you know. And if you're not going to plant evidence, think about what's going to happen if you don't allow these people in and you do find something, you know. You're shooting yourself in the foot is what you're doing. I don't know who I'm talking to, but whoever is planning these things, man, they got to think a little better than that. Let's see. That's pretty much it as far as that particular region of the world. Yeah, we're not going to devote the whole show to this as we've been doing in the past because, well, you know, there's only so much we can say. There's only so much that, you know, we can talk about as far as this goes. We'd like to hear from listeners, obviously. Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. You know what? I'm sorry. Seraph is here. He's you know, a special guest in this one time, and you don't have headphones, so you have no way of hearing the callers. For over 10 years, I've been moaning and groaning about getting headphones in this studio. And I don't know what's so hard about putting headphones so that you can listen to the phone calls. So we'll have to try and, for instance, this dial tone.
I don't hear it.
I hear it. It's a pulsating dial tone. It's beautiful.
Pulsating, really?
It's pulsating, and it's pulsating because that means there's a message.
Oh, I'm missing out.
Yeah, I don't know how to get the message either. Yeah, so when people call in, we'll have to figure something out, some way that that you can hear them. They can hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just kind of, you'll have to infer what they're saying. I don't know. Yeah, and since most of our listeners don't listen to the actual station, apparently, they listen to the Internet. It takes a couple of minutes for my words to get out. So if you're out there, please give us a call, 631-632-WUSB. Let us know what you think as far as the rest of the world goes. We have listener feedback in various ways. People write in to otw@2600.com, which is our email address. This person named Aaron wrote in, just wanted to write and tell you that I appreciate your show. I wish that more people would be like you, oh boy, and listen to both sides of an argument. Unfortunately, it appears that is not the case. Perhaps it is that some people are afraid if they hear another point of view that it might make them realize they are wrong. I notice that everywhere. Everywhere. You know, people just don't want to listen to another side. And that's something that you always have to do. Because even if you're 100% completely right, you know, it's kind of like what we're talking about here with the weapons inspectors. You know, why not listen to another point of view? Why not see another way of doing something? If you're right, then you'll know why you're right. And if you're wrong, you'll learn something and stop making a horrible mistake. If I had more money, I would have pledged. Unfortunately, I do not. Well, don't feel too guilty about that. I live in Mississippi, so it is very nice to hear an opinion other than the classic kill them all and let God sort them out. I hope to hear your show for a long time. Is that a nice letter?
Yeah.
From Mississippi. That's from Aaron. Thank you very much for writing into us. And it just goes to show that there's people out there, you know, everywhere, by looking at our phones. I don't know why people are hesitant to call this show. It's not like Off the Hook where the phones are ringing constantly, but, you know, a lot of the same people listen. A lot of people listen, obviously, later, you know, when it's archived on the Internet, so they can't call in, or if they do, they won't get me. But for those of you out there, you know, this is a good opportunity. You're not limited to talking about one particular subject. You can pretty much say whatever comes to mind as far as topics that are of interest. You can even change where we're going. You know, you can steer the ship in a totally different direction.
And even if you don't want to listen to both sides, we will.
Yeah. Yeah, we will. We absolutely will.
We won't bite your head off.
631-632... WUSB 9872 is what WUSB stands for. Here's a call, so we're going to take this. Let's see if maybe I can turn. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
All right. This has been going on for years. There's nothing really new. It's just men the way they are. there always someone is going to be a predator. Maybe, you know, that's what we came to be predators, whether it is physical or, you know, against someone else or in a mental capacity. Compassion is going away with the capitalism system.
Uh-huh. So you think it's just...
Look at Roosevelt years ago. Did he know about Pearl Harbor? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to go to war, you go all out, meaning you knock the news media out and you go all out. Because if you're in an infantry platoon, one of you guys are more important than the whole population of that country you're going against.
Yeah, you're saying one Marine is more important than the entire population of whatever country they're fighting.
If you're going to go to war, yes. Mm-hmm. If you're going to stick me in that position.
Well, I imagine that's true from their point of view.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Until you are in an infantry platoon, you don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I had my stint in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
I was a ground pounder. I came out number 2 in the lottery.
Uh-huh.
And did my thing, and you know what? It made me very unbe able to believe anything.
Unable to believe in what regard? As far as things you were told?
Mm-hmm. Government. You know what I mean? It's, you know, I got it to be, it became a doubting Thomas. I want to stick my hands in the side before I believe the government.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're not the God. You know, there's too many crazy things.
Yeah, I think questioning.
As an individual, you can't do nothing about it.
Well, questioning is always a very healthy thing to do, you know, and that's...
It's healthy, but it's not going to do anything. So the best is to do is just be your own self and go around the street and be happy because you're not going to change anything.
Well, you know, I can't really be happy if I'm told I'm not going to change anything. I think I can change things if I get to the right people, if I make a good enough case.
Be an ostrich.
Well, I mean, you know, if you say you're not going to change anything, you're going to get a lot of ostriches. You're going to get a lot of people that will keep their head under the sand and not try. But I think there's always a chance that, you know, you might wake somebody up or turn the tide in some way. You know, I mean, that is how the Vietnam War ended, after all. A lot of people woke up and saw that something was wrong, and it stopped.
And at the time, they cut, resupply and funds to it. So who was getting cut? The guy in the damn platoon out there.
Well, I mean, the way they did it, obviously, was not, you know, planned by the people marching
home
in the streets. But the fact that the whole thing in itself stunk, that's something that was not being said until you know, millions of people started to say it en masse. You know, and that's what I'm talking about, where suddenly an idea is presented, it spreads, lots and lots of people start to,
manure,
you know, to
take spreads
part.
Too.
What spreads?
Manure.
Uh-huh.
I mean, didn't they just, we have all this rah-rah, roll your flag, put your ribbon on?
Right.
When the veterans could come, let's cut their benefits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, of course, and you won't see any criticism of that either from the mass media, because it doesn't sell stories.
In the position with the dollar that you, myself, as just a working man, cannot do nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Well, basically, sir, if you didn't hear any of that, I'm sorry. But basically, he was saying how, you know, the average person really doesn't have the power to change something, and I was kind of arguing that, you know, that you do. I mean, you know, there's a little more to it than that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try to do. There's two things in the back of this phone. I'm going to try unplugging one of them. This might allow the phone to actually come through. The thing is, I want to make sure that that they can be heard over the air as well. Can you hear anything now?
No.
Anything yet?
No.
Okay. Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, the geniuses who put this place together didn't see fit to give headphones to the guests. So, what can I do? You know, this button, I think, this button used to defeat the entire muting system. Hang on, I'm going to press it, but something scary might happen. Oh, no, that button's been disabled. Oh, boy.
Hmm. Let's just try each button once until something happens.
There was a way, what you can do is you can run out into the newsroom,
mm-hmm,
listen to the caller, and then tear back in here if you have a comment.
Hmm.
And that way, at least you know what they're saying. You know?
I just might try that.
All right, second on the call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm Bob calling over here from Smithtown.
Smithtown? Okay, Smithtown exists. I know that town.
Yeah, it's a real town, yeah.
It's a real town.
Anyways, you brought up something about Bush and the Middle East, and I just wanted to point out something.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring a democratic government to them,
mm-hmm,
Well, this is brought to you by the president that basically brought us to 2000 elections.
Yeah.
I just want people to re-examine that for themselves, because it's off the radar screen since it happened, and this should put it right back on. This is a person that really had little use for the Constitution or a way of, you know, being fairly elected. And now we're going to help out Iraq with this process.
Well, the thing is, you know, if Iraq actually gets a government that is elected by the majority of their people, they will have something that we do not have, you know. And that's the irony of that is just unbelievable.
You got my point, and that's what I'm just asking people to reexamine for themselves. It's not past history. It's 2 years ago. You know, take a look back at it.
Uh-huh.
3 years, actually, if you want to round up.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's it. And
all right. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye now.
631-632-WUSB, and that's a very good point, because the election of 2000, I wish we were on the air then doing this show, because we would have had so much to talk about. And yeah, I know there's a lot of people out there tearing their hair out saying, oh, what are you talking about? Of course it was constitutional, that's what the Constitution says, the Electoral College and all that garbage. Yeah, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the way people dealt with it, the way people said, oh, it's already been counted twice, sore loser man, all that kind of thing. Obviously, something is majorly wrong with the system when a president can be decided based on some confused voters in a particular county, and that county was not selected by either side. That was just it was the last state to actually decide one way or another who was the actual winner of that election. And when you look closer at that state, you found all kinds of problems with the ballot. So probably if you look closer at any state, you would find all kinds of problems with ballots. So something is fundamentally flawed with the system, and that's something that so many people who are on the quote unquote winning side just refuse to acknowledge. You know, and I'm sure the same thing would have happened if it went the other way as well. All right. In all fairness, I'm sure Gore would be saying the exact same things that, that Bush was saying, that his people would be defending the Electoral College if they had won. I'm sure of it. I'm absolutely certain of that. But you just have to look at the system as being flawed and approach it, with that in mind and fix it. Do something about it. So that's what so many people don't get. That's what so many people don't acknowledge. And I think that's more the problem than who got elected and who didn't. Would have been interesting, though, to see what would have happened with Gore at the helm. I'm very curious. I don't know if very much would have been different or if a lot of things would have been different. Who knows? 631-632-WUSB is our phone number. Let's take a look at some more feedback from listeners. This person writes in, the caller that mentioned the Spring 2600 cover reminded me, has anyone noticed that the picture of Big Brother looks like a devil's head when you look at it upside down? Well, I don't know about that. I looked at it upside down and I didn't see a devil's head, but then again, I don't really see devil's heads all that often. So, that's possible, I suppose. We have the new issue, though. Look at this. Sarah, if you're back.
Yes.
Were you able to listen to the caller right there?
Yes, I was.
That's good. I'm sorry you have to travel all the way down the hallway and
it's so far.
Yeah, but you have the key to get into the locked room with the speaker,
mm-hmm.
And you're able to hear most of what he said, which is good. It's even better than having headphones in the studio, I think, because you get exercise at the same time and
more comfortable.
Yeah, but we're long past that topic now, so don't even talk about what the guy said because it's ancient history.
Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Here is a copy of the new edition of 2600. Sorry, I didn't mean to hit you with it.
That's a great cover.
It's a good cover. We're not going to tell the people what the cover is because that would be in violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, but which for once is working for me. This is the new issue, the Spring 2003 issue. So all those of you out there who are bitching about not getting it, well, this is why, because it just came out, all right? It's being mailed out either today or tomorrow to the subscribers. Yeah, it's good. I like it. It's got some good articles in it as well. Yeah.
And I won't say what's on the cover, but it's very colorful. It's hard
colorful.
To miss.
Yeah, it's colorful, and I think it says a lot, too. It really does. It really does. You know, we always get really good cover submissions from people, and this is no exception. Or good ideas, concepts, that kind of thing. If you have an idea for that, please email us, too. You can email otw@2600.com. It'll go to the right people eventually. We're still taking phone calls, 631-632-WUSB here at WUSB in Stony Brook, State University of New York at Stony Brook. I don't know if you wear that, sir, but you're on a campus right now.
Yes.
This college campus.
I've actually been admitted here.
No, it's not a psychiatric institution.
No. I mean, I applied to go to school here, and I was accepted.
You mean you actually volunteered to come here?
Yes.
You weren't drafted into this place?
Well, I mean, I may have been deranged at the time.
Because most people are, they don't ask to come here. They're taken here,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they can't leave for at least 4 years. Some are here significantly longer than that. I was here for 5 years, actually. And, it's amazing people actually ask to come here now.
I never went, though. Though, I guess I did today.
But you never went, but you're here now?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, for those of you listening in a official capacity, the studios of the radio station have moved to a secret location, so if you're thinking of storming the building and grabbing Seraph to make him attend the school that he didn't go to, you won't find us in the Student Union building like you might think, because we've moved to the secret location. I just had to say that for legal reasons.
Oh, thank goodness.
But you know, the campus is, it's a fun campus, it really is, in all seriousness aside. It's one of these, places where you can do all kinds of neat things and learn all kinds of, I mean, everything that I've done, everything that I'm doing now, I guess it's time to blame somebody, is probably because of Stony Brook. That's where, you know, I picked up, skills as far as, publishing, as far as even typesetting. I picked up radio skills right here at this microphone right there. You know what? It is the same microphone. Wow. How about that? It's basically a place where I was just able to kind of wander around, explore, learn things, and just become more of an individual. Let those things that the public school system spent so much time trying to destroy, you know, whether it be through curriculum, teachers, or just, you know, bullies in the hallways, it all kind of came back in Stony Brook, and I was permitted to kind of grow and become the twisted individual that I am now. And that's, you know, hopefully that's what a college education will bring to most people, is that ability to become a twisted person. And Stony Brook, I thought, was particularly conducive to that because there was just so much going on. There were so many different cultures and so many different activities to take part in. And, of course, there were the classes, too, but that was a bit of a drag. But I got through it all. I got through it all okay, and it was a good place. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've gotten, you know, older and more cynical, but I just don't see the same kinds of fun things going on. I don't see the same kind. I mean, I see activities. I see people doing things. But they don't seem to be as idealistic. They don't seem to be as mischievous. They don't seem to be as individual-minded. Like, when I went here, there were no fraternities at all. I mean, it was just understood. This is Stony Brook, the Berkeley of the East, you know, fraternities. Of course, they have them in Berkeley, I know. But here, it was a state university, you know, it was the kind of thing that was looked down upon. And now they're everywhere. Now they're every place. You had all kinds of activism. You had environmental groups having demonstrations, protests, that kind of thing. You had all kinds of activity every single day. Those people seemed to be more in touch with what was happening in the rest of the world. You had more publications. You had just a general sense. Universities are the places where people think, where people trade ideas and begin to arguments and figure out who they really are. One of the things, okay, this is what really annoys me. This is my pet peeve, one of many, but this is my biggest pet peeve. There's this road outside the university called Nichols Road. Nobody knows how to spell it. It's spelled all different ways, but it's called Nichols Road, and it's this, you know, four lane divided highway type of a deal. On the top of the hill, as you head to the university from the south, there's this big, massive rock, you know. It's supposedly left over from the time of Columbus, where they just brought a rock here. I don't know. I don't know what the story of the rock is. It's just a huge rock, you know. It's always been there on the side of the road. And I remember when I was a little kid passing that rock, and every time I passed that rock, something else would be painted on it. You know, it'd be all kinds of activist slogans. It would be all kinds of art design. You know, Halloween, somebody would paint it orange and put a face on it. You know, U.S. out of whatever country U.S. was in at that particular time. And it was just, I guess, a way of expressing yourself that you could always count on being there. And over the past few years, the rock has just been surrounded by these very powerful lights, you know, really brilliant lights, like light it up like daytime, you know, in the middle of the night. And it was stripped of all the paint, which, you know, was a lot of paint. We're talking decades of people painting the rock. And now it's just assumed and accepted by everybody that painting the rock would be a bad thing. Painting the rock would be a crime. That would be something that you'd be punished for, something that is not permitted, not acceptable. And, you know, what annoys me more than the fact that, you know, that the administration would do this, would say, you know, you are not permitted to. I mean, who is it hurting? You know, a rock, you know, with various things painted on it occasionally. It was always something to look at as you drove by. It annoys me that the administration would be so presumptuous as to just take away something that was a natural way of expressing oneself. But what annoyed me even more than that was the way that the people, the other part of the university, the students, just accepted it, you know, didn't challenge it, didn't say, to hell with you, we're painting the rock anyway. I don't think I've seen the rock painted once in the last 5 years. Not once. And it's just so sad to see people submit, you know? It's, yeah, okay, I guess you could call it a form of vandalism, although I don't really see how. It's a rock and, you know, painting rocks. After all, there are rocks all over campus now. You know what they are? They're fraternity rocks. Yeah, little fraternity rocks that got all the Pi Delta whatever on them, you know. And that is not only permitted but encouraged by the university, because that's, you know, that's a nice way to, you know, work out all those, you know, ideas and thoughts and things and do something completely useless that doesn't mean anything and won't offend anybody except me. So you have that going on. You have, you know, all this energy being directed into something that doesn't really say anything that will make people think. And you have the, you know, the traditional way of expressing oneself just quietly subdued and you know, buried. And, that, you know, I think that's kind of like a microcosm as to what's been going on around here, where all these things have just slowly evaporated, where the university just isn't as active as it was in social things. You know, right now, at this moment, I got to tell you, right now, at this very moment, as I speak, at 6:43 p.m. on Tuesday, April 22nd, Earth Day, 2003, Noam Chomsky is giving a talk right here on campus, which I can't go to because I'm here, but I don't mind. It's okay. But, you know, things are happening. People do come here. There's interesting talks going on all the time. The world is a fascinating place. But, you know, you have this university here in the middle of Long Island, and I just think it could be doing so much more. Like, for instance, calling this radio show. I challenge anybody on campus right now to call this radio show. And I'll bet it's going to be like pulling teeth getting somebody on this campus. We have thousands and thousands of people here right now. How many of them are actually listening to a radio station that discusses issues and gives people the opportunity to, you know, to call in and voice their opinions? I mean, years ago, phone lines would be clogged. You know, people would be all over the place as far as talking about things. Do you think this phone call is actually from campus?
I don't know.
All right, let's find out. Good evening. You're on the air. Uh-huh. You see, and that pretty much proves my point, you know, that if you do get a call from on campus, it's going to be of that mentality. You didn't hear that, but you can judge.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. I mean, some things stay the same, like the fact that we don't have headphones in the studio. You know, some things are sacred traditions that we cannot let go of. But other things do change. Other things get worse. Other things, you know. I mean, you know, I can't talk about a lot of the things I did on campus because I don't know what the statute of limitations is. But I never did anything, you know, damaging to anything. I never stole anything. Never did anything. But, you know, probably a lot of things that I wouldn't want to get out to the people who are still alive. Maybe in another 30 years I can talk about it. But, okay, one of the things I can talk about, this campus has an amazing elaborate maze of tunnels underneath it. And everybody would go exploring the tunnels at some point in their college career. Everybody would do this. It just was so much fun. You'd go in through the Fine Arts Center and you'd walk around. There'd be the library, the administration building. You'd go down the ladder to the biology building, walk around to heavy engineering. You know, you could spend hours in the place just exploring. And these were tunnels that I guess were built for maintenance purposes. But everybody knew a way to get in. Everybody had their connection. Everybody knew a guy that knew a door that was sometimes left ajar that they could get into. And now, of course, you have surveillance cameras. You have digital locks that have all kinds of codes on them that prevent you from getting into places you're not supposed to be. And if, God forbid, you get into a place you're not supposed to be, you're probably thrown out of school now. or labeled a terrorist. Why would you want to be in a tunnel, you know? So and people don't even think about it anymore, you know? People don't realize what they're missing.
There's this cycle that happens where an administration will, or a government,
mm-hmm.
will make all sorts of new regulations that keep people from doing the things that they would ordinarily do.
Yeah.
But it has another effect on people as well. They don't just stop doing the things that are illegal. Their whole expectation of the kind of freedom that they should have goes down a couple of notches.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon, a lot of the things that people aren't doing, like people who aren't calling this radio station right now,
mm-hmm.
they're not doing it because of a regulation. They're doing it because there's this overall feeling of things being quelled. And whether it's legal or illegal, a whole cloud of possibilities and options for people all sort of get grouped together into
right.
something that's looked down upon. But it's not looked down upon. It's looked down upon by a very small group of people, and you don't have to listen to them.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't have to listen. You don't listen to us, and obviously a lot of people are taking that advice. But like the first caller was saying, you know, the average person doesn't have the power to change things. I don't agree with that. I think the average person can be that spark that, you know, makes something happen. It makes another person, you know. I didn't think that I would ever have any power to make somebody think differently. But I'm told over and over again what an inspiration I've been to other people, you know, as far as, I mean, people have decided to become lawyers because of what's happened in 2600. People have gone to certain schools because they've, you know, they've read our magazine and decided that, you know, they want to go to a place that has an enlightened policy. There's all kinds of, you know, of ways you can reach people. And I'm not just talking about if you happen to get into the national spotlight and you manage to reach people that way. I'm talking about on a one-to-one basis. You can say something to somebody that makes them wake up. Yeah, of course, if they don't want to listen, they won't listen. But you never know when someone actually is paying attention. So never sell yourself short. I mean, you know, you always have that possibility. Now, you've done some interesting things, Seraph, in your college
days. Oh, boy, I see. I don't know what I can talk about there either.
Well, you know, I think it's important. There are people out there in universities, university settings, that, for lack of a better term, they own the university. They
yes.
they basically know everything that's going on. They're able to figure out every system that's out there, whether it be the phone system, the computer system, how security works, how the buildings operate, that kind of thing. People will take an interest in this. These are the people who will take an interest in things and the rest of society as well. And they will always be, you know, one step ahead of everybody else. I'm convinced every campus has a group like this. They might not even know each other, but there are people everywhere that are, you know, awake and alert and paying attention to what's going on. I don't know where those people are now, as far as this particular campus. I know they're somewhere. I don't know if they're listening to us, but it gives me a lot of comfort to know that they're out there. Now, you were part of that group of people on your campus.
I was.
Uh-huh. Anything that, you know, wouldn't land you in the brig?
Well, you know, I'm not going to go into anything specific,
mm-hmm.
but the fact is that there were a lot of problems on campus. There were problems of people coming from off campus,
yeah.
coming onto our campus and causing certain kinds of problems, and the public safety department wasn't taking care of that.
Mm-hmm.
There were all sorts of things that students wanted to get done, projects they wanted to pursue, and the materials just weren't available for them. And the materials were there. They were in the buildings,
uh-huh.
lying dormant all night.
Uh-huh.
Why shouldn't somebody who's fascinated by chemistry be able to go into the chemistry building and do some chemistry?
Oh, boy. Well, okay. I'm sure there's all kinds of reasons why somebody would be uncomfortable with that. But
Well, I'm sure there are safety issues, but that was the principle.
Mm-hmm.
And would it...
Access. Yeah, okay.
And what it came down to was the fact that these organizations that were supposed to be maintaining these things and providing these services and options for students weren't doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so inept that they were actually unable to prevent us from taking over their job. And so we sort of became the new administration. And,
mm-hmm.
and we really opened things up for people, I feel.
Yeah, you know, people are very gullible. That's another thing that you know, I've found to be, like, the theme of my life is the gullibility of people, the way people will believe something you tell them if you just tell them something with authority. And when you do that yourself and see how easy it is, you realize what's really going on in the world and how people are constantly being told things, and it's just basically being, you know, you're believing somebody because they have the air of authority. It's like walking into a building with a large amount of keys. Everybody figures you belong there. And they're just basing it on the way that you act, the way that you look, and, you know, the limited amount that they know about the situation. That's how so many things work. That's how, you know, that's how people get access to all kinds of things they normally wouldn't have access to. And, you know, in a university setting, it's different than the real world because, you know, you're still kind of innocent. You're still kind of learning. And it always was sort of just a fun place to play and be mischievous and, you know, without incurring the wrath of too many powerful people. And I think most people who do this are completely respectful of you know things around them. They don't cause damage. You know, they have the stupid people just like to vandalize and mess things up. Those people seem to exist everywhere. They're timeless, and they're never in that particular group that we're talking about. People who you know are interested in just learning how systems work and spreading information, meeting other people. Unfortunately, I've seen things get to such a state in this society of ours where, you know, even asking questions is something that is enough to label you as suspicious. And eventually what happens is people, they self-censor, you know. They don't go out and paint rocks because they'd be a terrorist if they did that. They don't go and try to figure out how to get into the tunnel system because, well, you know, what happens when they get caught? You know, what are they going to be accused of? They don't even question these things. They don't even talk to people. They don't even, you know, try to find other things. That's what's dangerous, you know? When people start to think in the way that they're told they must think, they don't question.
You know, here's something that puzzles me.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too far back into the Iraq thing, but it's an analogy for something much more general, mm-hmm. which is that who is the government? The government is whoever sort of appears to be the government. It's whoever is providing the basic services that one expects of government.
Mm-hmm.
Right now in Iraq, there really is no government. People are running around looting. There's no power. There's no clean water. All sorts of problems like this. It really wouldn't take much. I mean, it would take a lot, you know, compared to what just a few individuals can accomplish. But an organization could come into Iraq, and they could start doing these things. They could say, we're going to help get these power stations back online. We're going to get the water flowing again.
Well, the UN wants to do that. I don't think the U.S. is letting them.
Right, but an organization that we don't even know the name of could come in and do this. And it's analogous to what I did back in college, which was that mm-hmm. Things were in chaos. The existing supposed administration wasn't really doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to come in and say, well, we'll do these things for people.
Uh-huh. And pretty soon, and do it secretly, too.
Well, secretly, well, I mean, parts of it were secret, but parts of it weren't. And the parts that weren't gained us a lot of respect from the student body. And people knew who we were. They mm-hmm. didn't know us by name, but they recognized our faces. And they said, oh, you're those guys who such and such.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't take any type of official doctrine to place us in that seat. It doesn't take any kind of agreement with the existing administration. There's no official transfer of power.
Mm-hmm.
By putting yourself in that position, you're in that position. And, I mean, if you have an existing entity that's going to try to stop you from doing that, that's one thing.
Right.
But if you're stronger than they are, and I don't mean guns or lawyers or anything like that, if your will is stronger,
mm-hmm.
and if you're not going to let it escalate to violence, you can very easily seize power over the things that you want to seize power to, and you can do something good with them.
That's right. That's right. And look at all the things, you know, if you look at this from a world perspective, look at the Berlin Wall coming down. You know, look at whatever revolutions have taken place, whether it be the Philippines or, you know, Czechoslovakia or any place. You will see that the people who eventually won were so much weaker than what they were going up against. They had no chance. If they had looked at this on paper, they would have realized they had no chance, but they did it anyway. Now, you know, we're not talking about toppling a government and you know, changing the way things work on a very fundamental level. We're talking about simply expressing yourself in a particular way, doing something different, getting access to something that you're told you can't get access to, you know, and believing that it's possible, to meet other people and just do something interesting. And that's always, yeah, as far as university goes, university has always been the kind of environment where, you know, you try things differently, where you experiment and interact. And sometimes don't follow the rules, you know. It's not essential that you break the rules, but university is a place where you kind of like, you know, are wavering sometimes. And I just get the feeling that now it's almost like a police state. You know, you have to conform to very strict standards. And, you know, we have a lot more rules now than we did even 20 years ago. That changes people. That changes the way they think. And, of course, that's going to change the way people are after they get out of college. And it's going to change how they treat their kids when they have kids. And it just, you know, it's a downward spiral that I'd like to see reversed in some way. And I'd like to see, based on Seraph, on your suggestions just now, maybe people will be inspired to do something out there, not just at this university. I don't think we can inspire anything at this university. Not a single phone call, too. Everywhere. Let us know, you know, I did this because of what you said, and now I'm in a lot of trouble, and it's your fault. You know, those are the kind of letters we want to see. OTW@2600.com.
And, you know, here's an ongoing example of the great success of this way of thinking that we're talking about, is what's going on with the students right now, and really for, the recent history of MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, over in Boston.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about a campus that's really, so many things are controlled by the students. The administration has no idea of nine-tenths of the stuff that happens at MIT. There have been some terrible things that have happened as a result of that loss of control, but overwhelmingly, the things that happen there are great, and the end result of it is that MIT produces the new breed of scientists, of young scientists, year mm-hmm. after year after year.
That's also where the hackers come from.
It is.
That's where the hackers started. So that's something to consider, you know. It's being an individual and going against the rules is not always a bad thing. Sometimes it is, you know. Sometimes it's a very bad thing. And we're not saying to disrespect the law, to disrespect the rules. We're just saying to think as an individual and question everything, including what we're saying right now. You know, that's really what it's all about. Look at this. Calls coming in. You know what? Schmucks, it's 3 minutes to the hour. We have to go now. Look at this. This happens every show I've ever done at this place. All right, people call in as I'm leaving. They don't call in at the beginning of the show.
Well, you know what, folks? Send us an email.
Yeah, send us an email if you can master that. OTW@2600.com. Sometimes universities block addresses, but I don't think they do that in this case. Those of you anywhere in the world, please do that. Next week, call us earlier, you know, and we'll try to take your phone calls. We'll be on again tomorrow night, Off the Hook on WBAI New York, 7 o'clock p.m. Back here again next week, and all kinds of other things to talk about. Boy, there's so much we didn't get to tonight, but stay tuned for the blues. Keep listening to this radio station if you've got it on your internet connection. Stay tuned, because you'll hear all kinds of interesting things. Manuel Goldstein saying goodnight. Seraph, say goodnight.
Good night.
Hey, Jean, this is Henry McLean, and I've finished my beautiful flying machine, and I'm ringing to say that I'm leaving, and maybe you'd like to fly with me and hide with me, baby. Isn't it strange how little we change? Isn't it sad we're insane? Playing the games that we know end in tears, the games we've been playing for thousands and thousands and thousands.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.